After a protracted period of habituation of the mind to the object of meditation, the very constitution of the object appears to undergo a transformation inwardly, so that the mind begins to gain a sort of insight into the subtle character of the object rather than merely its outer gross form. This stage of meditation where the gross form of the object is stepped over and its subtle nature is grasped by the mind directly, independent of the senses. In this stage of meditation, there is a new type of perception altogether of the world as a whole. The world does not look like a conglomeration of solid things, but a web knit, as it were, out of subtler forces, which are more affiliated to one another than they would appear on the surface merely from the point of view of their gross bodies. This subtlety, which is the essence behind the gross forms of objects, is known in yoga and Sankhya terminology, tanmatra. The vibrations which are at the background of all grossness of forms are the tanmatras. And these vibrations are not merely some functions or activities proceeding from the objects, but they are the very stuff of the objects themselves. The forces or the energies which emanate from the objects are not something extraneous to the essential nature of the objects. They are not attributes or qualities which inhere in substances called the objects, but they are the inner essences of the objects. To give you an instance as to what it means, the electrical forces that are inside a solid object like a granite or a stone are not attributes of the stone, but they are the substance out of which the stone is made, the atoms, the molecules, the electrons, etc. They are not qualities that emanate from the object of perception, but they are inherent principles which can be made visible only to a microscopic vision. The physical perception cannot be adequate for the purpose. When we go deeper into the structure of an object, we begin to realize also a new feature that is present in the object. That is, it is more friendly towards others than it appeared on the surface. To give another example, we have the waves in the ocean. If you concentrate the mind only on the waves, the crests of waters, naturally, we would conclude that each wave is different from the other wave. There is a vast difference between one and the other in formation as well as distance of one from the other, etc. But the constitution of the waves is the substance of the ocean, and the vision that can go deep into the body of the ocean can visualize the affiliation of one wave with the other. Notwithstanding that one wave may dash against another as if they are enemies, as if one has nothing to do with the other, absolutely distinct one from the other. In a similar manner, objects look distinct in the world, one cut off from the other in every manner, in shape, in contour, in even intention, purpose, etc. of one's behavior. But all these differentiations that are visible outside from the standpoint of grossness of bodies enter into a new realm of a greater unity and coordination of forces when insight into the background of these bodies is gained. This step in meditation is for the common audience only a theory. It is of no use for practice because one cannot enter into the subtle nature of things by any amount of effort. This is a stage of experience and not merely of understanding. When you gain mastery over the object in its relation to the subject, which you are, the subtle nature of the object automatically reveals itself in direct experience, and it is not merely an object of consideration academically. We can only imagine what our experiences could be up to the level of the grossness of forms, though we may conceive them in their interrelatedness. But beyond that, the mind cannot go, because what the eyes cannot see, or the ears cannot hear, the senses cannot sense, the mind also cannot think. These subtle elements, the tanmatras, are imperceptible things. They are like the electrons in a stone. So we can only imagine, theoretically, that there are electrons inside, but we cannot see them with any amount of stretch of imagination. But they can be seen with a new type of apparatus, and perhaps a greater type of concentration of mind. However, Patanjali is concerned with giving us techniques of concentration and meditation, and he takes for granted that these are stages of experience rather than merely of instruction, because yoga is not instruction, it is practice and direct experience. Every stage is one of experience, and any stage divested of experience is merely a theory which will be of no use in one's practical life. So the higher step cannot be known unless the lower step is mastered and overcome. In one of the sutras it is pointed out that what the next step would be will be indicated by the extent of mastery that one gains over the lower stage. A person who is in the first stage cannot know what the third stage would be, because there is a second stage intervening, and unless the second one is also stepped over in direct experience, the third one cannot be known. Hence, the process of yoga meditation is very graduated, and not one link in this chain can be completely ignored. Every step is a necessary step, and when all the steps relevant to the grossness of forms are taken in their completeness, and every aspect of the gross form of the object is considered analytically and experienced, the inner nature of the object is revealed. This, a perception of the subtle nature of the object, is a more advanced state of meditation than the earlier ones described. And this condition is described by Patanjali as Savichara, far above the Savitarka and the Nirvitarka states. And here again a distinction is drawn between the subtle condition in its related shape state and the subtle condition in its unrelated state. So that a distinction between what is known as Savichara and Nirvichara is drawn. In this condition, where the absorption of the mind into the object becomes almost complete, mind ceases to be merely an instrument of cognition as something extraneous to the nature of the object. It does not remain there merely as an apparatus with the help of which we come into an artificial contact with the object outside, but it becomes in its essential nature again something which is akin to the object itself in its essential nature. There is some basic similarity of character between the structure of the mind and the structure of the object, the absence of the knowledge of which is the reason behind the attachment of the mind to the objects. Any kind of running of the mind towards external objects is due to the inability of the mind to perceive the consubstantiation of its own nature with the nature of the object. If there is inherent in the mind itself the characters of that towards which it is moving, the motion itself will cease. This is what happens in these stages of meditation known as Savichara and Nirvichara. Not only that, even the meditating principle, the subjectivity there, becomes one with the nature of the object. And as it was described in an earlier sutra which we have discussed, it becomes impossible to distinguish between the meditator, the object that is meditated upon, and the process intervening. This was the condition described in the sutra, Chidamrittehe, etc., which we have studied earlier. Nirvichara Vaisharadhi Adhyatma Prasada, say the sutra. In the state of Nirvichara, where deliberate argumentation, analysis, etc. cease, logical function of the mind comes to an end. There is no deduction or induction process anymore. There is only visualization directly. Here, the peace of the self manifests itself. Where does it manifest itself? In the luminous condition attained through the meditation known as Nirvichara. Nirvichara Vaisharadhyay Adhyatma Prasada. Prasada is peace, serenity, tranquility, complete self-absorption, free from all distractions and rajasic agitation. Here again, a novel experience supervenes. which was unexpected and unknown to the mind in its ordinary cognitions. The mind gets filled to the brim with the truths of things. Ratambhara tatra prajna. Rita is truth. Bhara is filled with. Tatra is there. Prajna is consciousness. Consciousness or mind there is filled, overflowing with the nature of truth. What is truth? It is the nature of things as they stand in themselves, unrelated through space, time or causality. And in this experience of the truth of things, the mind rests in its own nature like the profound ocean whose depths cannot be fathomed, like the deep Pacific whose bottom no one knows. And the steadiness of the mind which is attained here is comparable only with the magnificence of the infinite. Here again, theoretical discussions will not work because we are now stepping over the realm of ordinary perception and intellectual analysis. The means of knowledge known as rationality, intellection, logic, perception, sensation, etc. cease. And we are here in realms of immediacy of knowledge, a parokshata, not merely parokshajnana or indirect knowledge. The truth with which the mind is filled here is not merely a condition of things, not a truth about which we are speaking in ordinary life, but the very being of all things. When we say speak the truth, we refer to a state of affairs where our idea corresponds to a fact. When the notion that is in the mind is consonant with what is already there, we call this notion a truthful notion. And when we express in language this notion that is in consonance with the facts as they are sensorily perceived, we say the person is speaking a truth. But this is not the truth that we are speaking of here. When we are studying this Sutra of Patanjali, where we are told that the mind is filled with truth, the mind is filled with being. This is what he means. Because truth is the same as being. It is not merely a way of expression and not a correspondence of idea to fact. Because here the ideas themselves cease in the stages of Savitarka and Nirvitarka, which we have discussed already. The apparent distinction that is there between the idea of an object and the object as such has been properly understood and mastered. And ideas were known to be merely descriptions of the nature of an object. And the object is not the same as the idea of the object. Hence the question of the correspondence of the idea with the object does not arise, where the object has become a part and parcel of one's own being. So this truth is something different from the ordinary empirical truth that we are speaking of or with which we are acquainted. No one humanly can know what this truth is and what its condition known as Ridambara is. If the stuff of the whole universe is pressed into your mind and you are laden heavily with the substance of the whole universe and you are carrying that weight in your mind, that weight of the whole cosmos, the substantiality of all things in the whole universe, the entire magnitude and substance of the universe is pressed into your mind. It is stuffed into your consciousness and you are moving with it heavily laden in yourself. What would be that condition? That is perhaps the state called Ritambhara, where you become a vehicle of the universe. You become the universe itself. And when you walk, it looks as if the universe is walking. The entire substantiality of things is injected into every cell of the body of this meditating consciousness. And this is not a human condition, where human nature is completely transcended and divinity takes possession of humanity. In this perception, which is Ritambhara, the ordinary means of cognition get absorbed into a new type of means altogether. It is not the eyes that see or the ears that hear. It is not even the mind that thinks here. It is that superior principle within us, of which these are the manifestations, that becomes the instrument of direct awareness of all things in their simultaneity and not in succession. We cannot have a simultaneous knowledge of anything in this world. Everything is known one after the other. If you enjoy a sunset or a scene in nature, you enjoy the discrete objects one after another in succession and not in their totality or completeness as one stroke. We cannot enjoy anything at once, simultaneously. Even if you take your lunch, you cannot stuff everything into your mouth at one stroke. Item by item goes in. Even when we think thoughts, ideas come one after another in succession. Everything that is known to man is a processional activity and not a simultaneous grasp of being. But here in this condition of Ritambhara, the state where the mind is filled with truth, there is no successive procession of ideas and no necessity for the senses to function. You need not open the eyes to see objects or keep your ears open to hear sounds, nor is there a necessity for the functional activity of the mind as we are acquainted with usually. There is a direct grasp due to the entry of the mind into everything at one stroke in its pervasiveness. And even in this pervasiveness, it does not remain as an instrument of knowledge, but becomes the very substance of that which is to be known. Jnanam, jnayam, jnanagamyam, as the Bhagavad Gita puts it. It is the jnana as well as the jnaya. Vetasi vedyamcha also is a statement of the Bhagavad Gita. You are the known as well as the knower. It is the knower that becomes conscious of one's own self in the cognition of an object. Very strange indeed is this knowledge, that in the awareness of an object you become aware of your own self. And vice versa, in the knowledge of your own self, you become aware of the object. So that to possess yourself is to possess things. And to possess things is to possess yourself. This is the nature of the mind, where it is filled with truth, Radambara. Here, the processes of knowledge known as perception, inference, verbal testimony, etc. cease. Because these empirical processes are valid only as long as the objects lie outside, in space, in time, and causally related. While this is not the case, the means adopted under those conditions become inadequate. Shruta anumana prajnabhyam annivishaya visheshartatvat is a sutra which describes the nature of the knowledge which comprehends objects here. Shruta is what is heard, verbal testimony. Anumana is induction, deduction, logic, inference. The knowledge that we gain by inferential activity of the mind and by verbal testimony as well as by sensory cognition perception is different from the intuitive grasp of things into which we enter here in the state of filledness with truth. Radambara tatra prajna. Visheshartatvat, the reason is given here. The object of knowledge here is completely different from the object of ordinary knowledge. The objects in ordinary knowledge stand there outside as strangers to the beams of perception, never allowing themselves to be absorbed into the means, always standing outside, requiring a communication by means of extraneous apparatus through the mind and the senses. Whatever be the hospitality that you show to a foreigner, a stranger, whatever be the love that you may have towards an object which does not really belong to you, whatever be the feeling that you have towards the most valuable of things in this world, if only it is not yours, you will know the inadequacy of your affections and the futility of your efforts in that direction, merely because of the reason you stand outside that which you are seeking, perceiving, loving, etc. So there is a sense of insecurity and unhappiness present in all processes of knowledge and activity in the world for obvious reasons. But this insecurity and unhappiness vanishes immediately here, in this state where the object of knowledge is not an object at all.
It is the subject itself that enjoys itself. Atmarati, Atma Krida, Atma Mithuna, Atmananda Saswarad Bhavati.
Krida, Atma Mithuna, Atmananda Saswarad Bhavati. Here in this state, one enjoys one's own self, not an object outside. And the question of enjoying an object does not arise because the self has assumed such a magnitude that it has comprehended all objects which it desired earlier through senses. And the activity of this person who has attained this state is not a movement of the limbs of the body, but it is a movement of self within itself. It is the rumbling of the ocean of consciousness within its own bosom. And as the Upanishad in this passage beautifully puts it, one keeps company of one's own self. One is friend of one's own self. One rejoices with one's own self. One plays with one's own self. And one enjoys in every way the self that is there. Such a person has passport into all worlds, says the Upanishad. Tasya sarvesha lokeshu kamacharo bhavati. You can enter into any place without any permission. Who is to give you permission? Because you are the master of every house. You are the owner of every piece of land anywhere in the universe. And you are the lord of the realms through which the universe manifests itself. Sarvesh lokeshu kamacharo bhavati. So sarvesh lokeshu, sarvesh bhuteshu, sarvesh atmasu annamatti. He enjoys through every mouth, sees through every eye, and becomes the soul of all things. Not the gods put together can obstruct him in his activity, says the Brahadaranyaka Upanishad. All this because the object of his knowledge and experience are identical. Whereas in our ordinary life, the objects of mere knowledge are different from objects of experience. We may be professors of knowledge of many things in this world of which we have no control and which we do not possess. And therefore this professorial knowledge is emptiness. Because you have no knowledge of the essential nature of these objects of which you have information. You have an informative acquaintance with the location of the objects in space and time in the relatedness causally, but you have no possession of them. So a professor of knowledge is not the owner of that knowledge. Because he owns only an informative description of the outer character of the object as he stands outside himself. But here, visheshartha, the object is special. What is the speciality of the object? It is no more an object. The word object is inapplicable here because it becomes merely a manifestation of what one's own self is. This condition is called intuition or insight, a direct entry into the being of things by not merely becoming but being those things. The self becomes all. The Purusha overcomes the clutches of Prakriti and stands in its own pristine purity. Now is the borderland of Kaivalya or Moksha towards which the yoga practice is directed. And these are some of the peculiar technicalities Patanjali has mentioned in the higher stages of meditation. Hari Om Tat Sat.